Welcome to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, covering topics of interest to lawyers handling civil appellate matters in Texas courts. This podcast demystifies appellate law and pulls back the curtain on the Texas appellate system through conversations with judges, court staff, and top trial and appellate practitioners. Listen in to discover best practices and tips for successfully presenting your case, managing your docket, and promoting efficiency through legal technology. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Smith and Jody Sanders.
Welcome back to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. I'm Todd Smith.
And I'm Jody Sanders.
We have with us today the director of TLAP, the Texas Lawyers Assistance Program, Chris Ritter from here in Austin. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks, Todd. Glad to be here.
Well, the Texas lawyers listening to this show, which makes up, I think, the majority of our audience, many of those folks may find your name familiar if they haven't heard you speak recently. But why don't you kind of give us some information about your background, your career as a practicing lawyer, and what led you to TLAP?
Thanks much. I am an attorney that practiced trial litigation for about 15 years. I grew up in Lubbock and went to law school here in Austin at UT. I practiced mostly insurance defense for a few years, and then plaintiffs' personal injury cases. And really, my path toward this started in about 2007. That year, I made partner at my law firm in Lubbock. I had finished about between 35 and 40 jury trials at that time, which is pretty exceptional for that age for doing civil defense work. And I had gotten awarded the Super Lawyer Rising Star Award, which was a big deal for a Lubbock lawyer. And everything on paper was perfect. And I was going through a divorce, and I'd never been more miserable in my life. And I was burned out at work. And I didn't tell people that, how burned out I was, but I got really depressed. My grandmother, who was one of the first elementary school principals in Lubbock, was also a counselor before. So whenever I got a call from an opposing counsel one day, it was actually his paralegal. And it was one of those cases where you're trying to find the other attorney, and you call and call and call. And I got a call back that he had died in an accident. And in the middle of the divorce, my grandmother died, who I was very close to. And so I was in a time of grief and poor mental health. And I thought to myself, that attorney that just died in an accident is the lucky one. I remember thinking about that, what my grandmother had told me about it. If I ever got depression, to talk to a counselor. I went to a counselor. Fast forward a couple of years, I got much healthier, quit drinking, decided to put my life, to give meaning to my life, to get involved in recovery work, eventually led me to TLAP. And the work we do now is so important. What I didn't know then, which I know now, is how normal a lot of what I went through is and how many attorneys struggle with these issues.
Attorneys are always trying to figure out the best, most efficient ways to stay on top of their game. Use QuickCheck on Westlaw Edge, a first-of-its-kind intelligent document analysis tool, to discover a new level of confidence. Simply upload a brief, yours or your opponent's, and in just minutes receive a report with warnings for cited authority, recommendations for additional relevant authority, as well as authority that is contrary to what your opponent cited. Improve the quality and thoroughness of your work without sacrificing time with QuickCheck on Westlaw Edge.
There was a pretty recent study. I think it was a Betty Ford study that kind of outlined some of that data. And then I remember, I don't know if it was you or somebody else from TLAP doing a presentation, and I was kind of shocked by the incidence of mental health, you know, substance abuse in the legal profession.
I would say that most attorneys think, you know, it's just me. What's wrong with me? Why am I struggling? And I just want to say, you know, everybody's been to a hearing where there's a picture of a totaled car and the attorney representing the person that caused it won't even admit that there's any property damage. Attorneys won't admit anything. We're trained to not admit things unless we must. But 46% of 13,000 attorneys admitted to struggling at some point with depression. 21% of all attorneys struggle with a serious drinking problem. And for young attorneys, it's almost a third. It's 32%. But attorneys frequently face burnout, frequently face depression. If 46% admit it, I'm just telling you, more than half of us are going to see problems with it. And I believe that it's rooted in something that's changing, and it's changing with programs like this. It's changing in law schools. We went to law school. I don't know about you two. The only thing I learned in law school about self-care was that they put a keg on the patio on Fridays. And I was there every Friday all through law school. And other than that, we did a little bit of intramural football. But there was very little taught to me in law school about, what do I do with all this stress? What do I do to kind of put some boundaries around my stressful career to have the life that I want? And I think that things are changing now. And, you know, on top of just the anxiety that we deal with that can lead to depression, we're also dealing with, you know, face-to-face with trauma. If we do criminal law, even appellate work, you're reading the facts on all this. What do you do when you have to digest fact patterns that involve serious assaults, children being taken away from a parent, you know, a client going to prison? All of these things are traumatic. And so there's a lot going on with our mental health. I'm happy to share more about that, but I wanted you to know, I thought I was a weak person because I was affected by the things that I was seeing every day. You know, I'd see wrongful death cases. I'd see people that were paralyzed. I'd have to ask questions of a person that killed someone in an accident. And that takes a toll on your mental health. And I just feel like we don't talk about it that much, but it's a pretty unique profession. You know, compared to other professions, I think practicing law, not only do we deal with important matters, but we don't have in the training in law school, like in medical school, they talk about the brain chemistry. They talk about how to manage health. And likewise, therapists that do this, they talk about self-care, and they're actually required for their first 3,000 hours of practice to debrief every week. You know, our debriefing is usually, mine was at happy hours. I don't know about you two.
No, that's right. And I think I've heard you say before, Chris, that one of the major causes behind all of this is the fact that we're, as lawyers, we're basically discouraged, I think would be one sort of mild description. We're discouraged from showing weakness. And so, especially in litigation, you know, but I think probably across practice areas, I mean, in transactional work, I've never been a transactional lawyer, but I can see how, you know, you're supposed to be a hard-nosed negotiator. So, you know, you can't reveal any weakness to the other side, but in litigation is probably the best example. I mean, you're supposed to be the kind of lawyer that people see on TV that never loses a case and, you know, is always the quickest and the smartest and wins every case. And even revealing any vulnerability to your client can be seen as a real negative. And so it seems like that's just a major cultural influence on what's going on with our profession these days.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things that's kind of an illusion is that I was in a law firm with about 30 lawyers. Many of us work and share office space, but 80% of us are solo practitioners. And even those of us that work in law firms, you can hide in a law firm pretty well. And we get isolated. And one of the things, when you're in a profession where online ratings exist, where everything that people find out about you, they hold it against you somehow later, it's a place where we feel very guarded, very worried. When we're dealing with social media, we see everyone else's wins. Nobody talks about their losses. And we hear about everybody else's victories and, oh, they bought a new house and all of these different things. And one of the things that I think lawyers are afraid to let others know about is that they're human, that they struggle, that we make mistakes, that we are happy sometimes with where we're at. And many of us, I've been in the position before where I was so guarded about that, I wouldn't want my partners to know. I was sick of what I was doing, but I also wouldn't want my significant other know a lot about what I was struggling with because I didn't want her to be afraid that I would fail or whatever that would cause. And so we are in a weird position to manage many of us, 50, 100 cases, some people many more than that if you do the right kind of law. But all of these people depend on us. And I think one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough, people talk about the negatives about lawyers with our egos and all that. But we're giving our lives away. I mean, we are we're so unselfish. We give up, most of us, all of our work life during the day to our clients, plus a lot of time after that, and then we very rarely give ourselves any time to take care of ourselves. And so we put ourselves last, and I think that's another big reason that we see so many attorneys struggle with mental health. Boundaries, and gosh, you know, look where we're at now in the pandemic. It seems like it's exaggerating a lot of the things that we're challenged with normally. But it's even more so because there's something ceremonial about leaving your office. But when you have your office in your house, all of a sudden, it's really hard not to check your email or feel like you might ought to walk across the hall and do a little more work. How are you guys making it right now?
I've been working out of the house 100% of the time for more than a year, and actually closer going on 2 years. And it really is difficult to draw that line. You know, I do have a dedicated home office, so I have the ability to change rooms. And if I'm going to go, you know, have dinner with my family, I have to physically get up and go to a different location, which I've always heard is kind of a good trigger for being able to keep things separate. But it's, you know, and speaking as a solo, you know, yeah, there's more pressure on you than ever right now. And it's more isolating than ever, because as you point out, the pandemic has made it more difficult to do the most basic sort of socialization things that make you feel better, going and hanging out with your friends, or even going to the gym hasn't been a given these days. What about you, Jody?
Yeah, you know, I'm slightly different. After Labor Day, I've been kind of going back in the office a couple of days, 2 or 3 days a week, and kind of alternating on that and being at home. So that has helped some. But I'll tell you, you know, before the pandemic, I 2 or 3 days a week, I'd go to lunch with somebody and, you know, get out of the office. And of course, now you have to really plan that out in advance. Okay, what place has a patio? You know, where can we go that we can be socially distanced? And so it happens, but it is really a lot more isolated than it was. And, you know, Zoom conferences are great, and they're as good as they can be, but it's just not quite the same as being able to just kind of have a hangout with somebody or stick your head in somebody's office and say, hey, what do you think about this? And so it really has been, you know, in some ways good, in some ways bad, but it has been a strange adjustment.
Definitely been some good that's come out of the pandemic. I mean, I think Zoom hearings are here to stay. We're going to see some efficiencies that are going to come out of that. But, you know, Chris, the problems that you pointed out at the beginning were all extremely prevalent for the pandemic. And it seems like now, you know, we're more reliant on technology than we ever have been. And I know technology can really make us more efficient and make things better in a lot of ways. But I've heard you say before, it actually is a big contributor to the problems that we've seen with lawyer well-being.
Oh, yeah. And I want to say, just to start talking about the pandemic, I was really kind of scratching my head. Like, I can't think of a more difficult year in my life than this. And so I thought, well, I wonder if this is the worst year ever. And so I decided to look it up, and actually, it's pretty close. It's in the top few of the worst years. It's a complicated year. You have medical, financial, social, all kinds of things going on that are complicated this year. But if it makes anyone feel better, look up the year 536. They had a fog that covered the earth. The temperature in the summer was freezing. All of the crops failed. Half of the earth perished. And it was just the worst year. And it's consensus the worst year ever. Wow. But this has been a tough year. And I think for us as attorneys, we're already at the tipping point. And when we're already at the tipping point with our stress, you know, we can be doing well. But all of a sudden, something like this can happen. And the resources, and I'm going to say, as a person, I'm in recovery. As an attorney in recovery, I can kind of exaggerate the need for some of the things that I normally went to. I need to see people. Lawyers need to see people. We need to see people to process what we're going through. We need to get kind of out of our rumination by talking to other people, seeing other people. And I feel like this year has really opened my mind to all the things that I took for granted that I didn't realize how much they made a difference. Going out to eat lunch with people, going to coffee without it being a scientific experiment to try to find where to go and all of that. But the daily routines that we had were a big deal. I'm a parent. I have a six-year-old. Spending 6 months straight with her without getting a break was really unhealthy. And we love each other, but there's a lot of parents out there that know what I'm talking about. We shouldn't be spending that much time with with our children, or we should be spending, we should have more variety. But it's also been difficult in many other ways. We've already, y'all have probably seen this film on Netflix. I highly recommend it, The Social Dilemma. We're already being manipulated by technology, but attorneys, we've used technology in the past as a little bit of an escape. You know, in between, let's say I'm going over to a deposition and I'm sitting in the lobby, I'm going to check Facebook or whatever. We've used it as a filler. But when we become isolated like this, the technology becomes even more overwhelming. And just for some background on technology, most of us get, on average, 120 new emails a day. That's a study that shows that we're averaging as professionals 120 new emails a day. Most of us, a recent study indicates the average American is getting 94 text messages a day. The average person in the United States is looking at your smartphone 150 times a day. This is unbelievable what this is doing to us. You know, if I went to my mailbox 150 times a day, my neighbor would call the cops on me. But we're doing this, you know, on our phones all the time, and we're spending 24 hours a week on the internet. I think lawyers may exceed that. And actually, during the pandemic, you can check, I've added an hour or two to my daily average on my phone on screen time. And it's part of that may be because I'm checking Twitter to see if the, I was kidding around, I think I'm going to weigh 270 before they got to the election of 270. You know, it's messed up for me personally as a person that used to have a drinking problem. It's messed with my boundaries on eating. I walk into the kitchen at any time and there's the refrigerator instead of at work where it's just a cooler with some drinks. And so everything that you can think of has gotten complicated. And just to let you know, there was a study on what happens to us with quarantine. And, you know, you already heard the stats on our mental health, but a study of 129 people that were, the only thing they were done is quarantined for a couple of weeks. And 28% of them after that quarantine showed symptoms of PTSD, and 31% of them had symptoms of depression. As a human, this is an unhealthy situation. And it becomes tedious because, you know, we've lost a lot of our tool. I used to go listen to music. Austin's a great place to do that. And I'd go listen to music. And now people are like, well, come to my Zoom show. I'm so sick of Zoom. By the end of the day, I don't want to get on and watch somebody play on Zoom. So it's complicated, but I do think this is a good time to really confront some of these things that are a problem, like technology, because it's been creeping up on lawyers for years. And maybe now is a time where it's essential to try to look at maybe creating some boundaries with that. How are you guys doing with your technology?
No, I noticed what you're saying, you know, definitely, especially with the election and kind of all the news going on around that. I definitely spent a lot more time on social media, on news sites and all that. And I finally last week just had to put it down and say, I've got to set some limits on this, because it makes you crazy. And, you know, beyond the end of your fingertips, there's not anything on there that I have the least bit of control over. And so, you know, you're just making yourself crazy, scrolling up and down news feeds, trying to see something going on that you can't do anything about. It is bound to have a detrimental impact on you. And, you know, particularly, and this is not unique to the pandemic, but I think in the last decade, especially, lawyers have really turned into 24-hour industries, because you can find me 24 hours a day. Now, thankfully, a lot of people don't, but that option is there. And I think about people that practiced 20 and 30 years ago, and that wasn't necessarily the norm, because you could go home and maybe somebody would call you, but probably not. If they sent you, you know, a letter, it might get in your office in a day or two. It might not, you know, but now it's instant. People expect responses. And that's just kind of the norm that we've created. And it is a very different situation, because you're right. I mean, not only do you now miss the ceremonial walking out of your office, but even if you still do that, everything else still goes with you because it's in your pocket.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad that you mentioned The Social Network, Chris. It's on my watch list. I haven't watched it yet, but there's a book that I love by an author named Cal Newport, who's written a couple of great books, but the one I'm thinking of now is called Digital Minimalism. And I think The Social Network covers some of the same research that Newport covers in his book, because he talks about how, you know, the social media platforms are designed to keep your eye glued to them for the benefit of their advertisers. And you're getting dopamine hits by, you know, watching to see if someone liked your tweet or your Facebook post or even your LinkedIn post. And I'll tell you, when I read that book for the first time, it scared me, just how pervasive this really is and how all of it's going on, you know, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, this is all kind of happening under our noses. And if we pay attention to screen time, like you mentioned, the function on an iPhone will tell you, you know, how much screen time you've had over a given week on that device. It really is very sobering to figure out how much time you're spending. And so, you know, even though I subscribe to the view definitely that you have to set boundaries, I do that with sort of mixed success on my own. I'm trying not to send emails, you know, during off hours or respond to emails during off hours. Try to set, you know, a pretty reasonable structure to my workday, which really helps. I'm really into trying to develop positive habits. Right now, I think, you know, once you do that, they can really sort of take over because a habit will help you sort of automate your behavior in a way that will help you avoid some of the negatives here. But like everybody else, you know, Election Day kind of tanked me. In fact, that whole week, I was pretty much shot. It was just a complete Twitter fest, you know, which was, I felt informed. But also, I'll tell you, even now, here we are, you know, more than a week later, and, you know, it's still a buzz on Twitter. And I find that the messaging going on there really from either side is just so negative that it brings you down and it distracts you. And so I've actually thought about deleting all the social media apps from my phone, which is one of the things that Newport does to do in his book. But that's a really hard step to take.
Well, and one of the suggestions that I've heard that, you know, it's almost impossible for attorneys who often have presence with their businesses on some of these platforms, but it's sometimes impossible for us to stay off too much. But I do think if you use your desktop instead of your phone, you're so much less likely to spend a lot of time. And you know what? If you have an emergency, you can always get on Safari and do it the old-fashioned way through the web browser. But, mm-hmm. you know, making it harder on yourself to get lost in it is another, you know, is one thing. One of the things that it seems like some people have suggested that may make some sense is kind of like you do with your refrigerator. If you want to eat healthy, fill it with healthy foods. So delete some of the apps that you struggle with and maybe put some apps on there that are healthy hobbies of yours. If you like to do escapisms are sometimes healthy, you know, to get out of what you're, you know, stressing about, video games and music and things that are a little less of that social mental health ego thing. And part of what I think people struggle with as attorneys before social media came along was we're comparative thinkers. We're very concerned about what people think about us because our art and our trade is to kind of, you know, delight a judge into doing what we want or to persuade a jury to do what we want or if you're doing an appeal to convince someone. And so we're really concerned about our image. It's part of our business model. And so that's also why we struggle with mental health some because we don't want to be vulnerable, because being vulnerable in this business can come back to haunt you. But I do want to share, I thought talking about my history with depression or my drinking problem, I thought that could be fatal to my practice whenever I was practicing law. I talked about it whenever I was still practicing. It was the opposite. I think that the world, I think people, they actually see it as, oh, wow, he overcame some things. He's a real person. He's strong or something. And I couldn't see it from that perspective. Likewise with civility, some of my heroes, and I think civility is a mental health tool. I think some of my heroes are some of the kindest lawyers, and they're happier, and they also win more because somehow their kindness to other people and even their adversaries, it gets them further than the other tactic, which, you know. So I think there are a lot of attorneys awakening to some of this. You'd be surprised how many attorneys now attend support groups, how many attorneys go to therapy. I think we talk about, you would think I was nasty if I never went to the dentist. But why are we thinking that I'm crazy because I go to a therapist? It's maintaining the most important organ we have. I think that that's changing too. You know, people now are saying, hey, I've got to go to therapy. I'll see you later. There was a time when that was a super secret.
For most clients, a supersedeas bond is something they may need once in a lifetime. And very few surety brokers specialize in supersedeas bonds. If your client needs to stay enforcement of a judgment in Texas or any other state or federal court, Court Surety Bond Agency is the company to call. Learn more by visiting courtsurety.com today.
You know, the bar associations are really emphasizing lawyer well-being and wellness now. The American Bar Association has sort of led the way on this. The Austin Bar, I know, has really focused a lot on it in the last year and a half or 2 years, and really, you know, trying to help not only educate their members, but also provide some of those kind of healthy outlets, you know, alternatives to going to happy hour, for example, that you know, that can help us a lot. And I think we're starting to see, you know, with those efforts, I think we're starting to see some cultural change. And also not only with respect to there being, you know, less of a stigma in, say, going to therapy or, you know, taking an antidepressant or whatever it may be, but also on the civility side. I'm seeing a lot of positive peer pressure. You know, people, maybe it's not the best strategy, but I see people getting called out for being, you know, jerks pretty regularly, and the courts don't seem to be tolerating it. And lawyers who have risen up to leadership positions in their firms aren't tolerating it, because it's just not right. It's not the right thing to do, for starters. But the other thing is I think there actually are some people who have talked about do Rambo litigation tactics actually help or benefit your client? And I think the answer really is no. And so if we get away from those strategies, I think we'd be healthier as a profession. And I don't think our clients would actually suffer for it.
I think I feel like maybe the next chapter, the next big movement is going to be well-being and civility intertwined, to talk about how if I'm doing well and someone is refusing to give me a 30-day extension on a deadline, I'm probably not going to, you know, cuss them out or whatever and flip out. But one of the things that I used to be afraid of when I was practicing in Lubbock, I'd be afraid of drawing an adversary from Dallas, because I felt like they were going to be so harsh and they weren't going to be willing to give me an extension. And actually, all it really took for me, no matter what city an attorney was from, is the possibility of another case with that person. And all of a sudden, our behavior seems to improve. And that's why I think smaller communities, people are a little less harsh, because they know they're going to have to deal with a person over and over again. I really appreciate what judges seem to be doing. They're not tolerating the games as much anymore. And I think if you file a motion for sanctions now, it better be very well grounded. I mean, it's really going to lose you a lot of respect for doing so, unless it's really well founded. But I think the whole nature of the practice of law and the dynamic between the adversary system is a component of mental health. I can't tell you how many attorneys have called me because another attorney filed a motion for sanctions, and it caused a mental health crisis. It's really not a nice thing to do to people if they haven't abused over and over and over again. But when you start saying, oh, we're going to ask for you to pay, you know, $15,000 in attorney's fees because you made a mistake, those kind of things really affect our well-being. And I think everybody's starting to say, hey, let's step back here and let's create a better environment for us to do this, because we're already stressed out. Do we really need to be bullies? Do we really need to be hateful? And I think that's something that actually I credit a lot of younger attorneys for wanting, and those of us in kind of that have been around a couple of decades, we're willing to go that way, you know. And I see that as a really positive thing. And likewise, I see the stigma changing with mental health, with therapy, with all of the other you know, there was a time when I was practicing, the first couple of years I was practicing, you didn't tell anybody you're going to go play golf ever. You know, you kept that secret because people might think you're, you know, not working hard enough. Now I know people that are like, hey, you need to go do some stuff, you know, you need to have some fun time or you're going to burn out. And it's an investment for law firms. They don't want to burn you out and spend a lot of time and money and investment in you as building skills and then lose you because you overdid it. So there's some really good things. I did want to bring up, since we were talking about technology, I have noticed since the pandemic happened that, and I've read many articles, drinking has increased because people are at home drinking. I read an article that said that there's 20% more people that are struggling with substances because they're drinking more from home. But one of the things that's happened to many of us, I wish I was one of these gym rats, but some of the resources we normally had, like gym, I know people that were really losing it because they couldn't go to the gym, but many of the resources that we normally had that we didn't really think about disappeared. And then what happens for lawyers, we're such advocates that our minds, our voices in our heads take positions. We're like, you know, we can make arguments on one side or another of everything. So we have a lot of black and white thinking. And many of us have this idea that everything's messed up and it's never going to change. And that can really give us a perspective of hopelessness. And I just want to say it's a good time to look at thinking habits right now, because the kinds of thought that help us to be good lawyers, thinking skills, are also the same things that can give you bad mental health. So taking a position, black and white thinking, all or none thinking, catastrophizing, these are all skills that are wonderful when you're writing an appellate brief to make everything look one way. But when you're weaving that into your life and you see all these problems, I just want to make mention of a tool that can offset that is a gratitude practice. If you find yourself noticing everything that's screwed up, just take a few days. You could do a 10-day, you could do a 1 week. I highly recommend trying to do it for 2 weeks, but just to think of 3 things a day that you're glad to have in your life. There's a lot of research that shows an increase in happiness of 25% in one study by doing this, because for lawyers, we can start seeing from law school on, we're trained to spot problems. And at a time when there are lots of problems, it can kind of validate, you know, there's nothing going well. And so I encourage people right now to try to think about trying out a gratitude journal.
It's a great tip. Certainly we've talked about therapy and medication, and I think those are incredibly valuable and things that everybody needs to consider. But along the lines of the gratitude journal, what are some other kind of ideas and tips that people can kind of do in their time at home, and, you know, that are not as formal as having to go through professionals to kind of maybe help themselves out?
Great question. I want to make mention at least 3 things, and all of them, all of the things I'm talking about are complicated, but as attorneys, we can definitely pick up. We're some of the best students, and so it's kind of nice as attorneys to be able to learn new stuff. It's funny because when you talk about therapy, most attorneys are hesitant because they're kind of like, well, what if somebody finds out that I went to a therapist? Or I just want you to know, most attorneys are going to struggle with depression, but depression is the most treatable, very highly treatable condition you can have. 80% of people with major depression completely recover from that within 6 to 8 sessions of cognitive behavioral therapy. Medication can help. You know, you go years with kind of heightened anxiety, and you can really, it can have an impact on your brain chemistry. So using medicine, using science, using therapists can be really healthy for attorneys because we can debrief. They can help us with skills like, how do I stop negative thinking, or how do I stop ruminating? How do I, you know, those kind of skills that you can really change and challenge thoughts. Attorneys are so used to devastating the other side that we become so skilled that we devastate ourselves too. We can cross-examine everything we do, and we can stop, unless we do gratitude, we can stop building ourselves up. But let me tell you a couple of tips. One, I think I mentioned earlier, is what therapists do. Find someone on a weekly basis that you can connect to and debrief with so that you can talk about what you're struggling with. Many times at a time like this, you're going to find out shortcuts from that person, you know, that, or you're going to find out that you also, that they also are struggling with the same thing. But one of the things that I think is really important right now is learning the skill of turning off your fight or flight nervous system. When we get to work, or when we're at home and check our email in the morning, we're one of the few animals that actually can be triggered into our fight or flight nervous system by thought. You can be laying in bed at night and imagine what happens is going to happen to you the next day in court, and your heart can race. Your body actually physically responds to your thinking. And so when you finish in the morning reading your mail or email or the hearing that's stressful or the phone conference that's stressful, remember this: you have activated your fight or flight nervous system. And in order to get healthy, you have to turn that off. It's like a light switch. It stays on. You stay in that until you do something physical to relax. And so there's a lot of things you can do physically to relax. One of them is breathe and focus on the breath. That's why meditation is such a big deal for lawyers, because we can do that at our desks. One study showed if you're in the 90th percentile for anxiety. By the way, in law school, we're in the 96th percentile for anxiety, and I don't think it gets easier, so I think we're definitely high anxiety profession. But if you're in the 90th, you can get to almost normal, the 57th percentile, after 2 weeks of doing breath work, focusing on the breath for 5 or more minutes a day. And all it is we're turning off our light switch on our nervous systems to where we're back to the relaxed mode. But for people that aren't comfortable with meditation, I also highly recommend the old-fashioned get up and go for a little walk. Mm-hmm. Because after you read your mail, there's something bad in there. We're lawyers. That's how it happens. And so we read that, you know, something comes in an email or whatever. Get up after you finish that and go for a short walk. 5 minutes is enough. But it makes a huge difference in your day. And I think at a time like this, it's probably nice to get out of your house anyway, but to go do something like that. But there's many other things you can do to activate your relaxed parasympathetic nervous system. Many people used to do them. That's why we're struggling. Going to the gym is one. You know, yoga, playing music is another. Gardening, golfing, cooking. These are all things that help us to get out of that rumination. I think that's a great thing. And a third thing that I think is a big deal right now, I've mentioned gratitude earlier, but learning how to set boundaries. And if it's with your phone, I think keeping it as simple as possible is, because it gets overwhelming if you have too many rules, but keeping it as simple as possible. You decide a threshold. Do you want to limit yourself to 3 hours on the phone? Go to screen time, and you can actually do that. You can put a time limit on how much you want each app to be allowed. And you can always punch in the code and get more. But you know what? It's kind of a shaming thing to just set it up that way so that you, okay, I'm going to give myself 5 more minutes. But it helps. And so that's one thing with boundaries. But I want to mention the proactive use of boundaries. I know a lot of attorneys that have all the intentions in the world to take care of themselves, but they run out of time. You can use your device, your calendar. I have to say, Todd may be the most organized I've ever met so far on setting this up, because I got emailed and everything set up for this podcast masterfully. But you can use that same technology to give yourself, how about 1% of your life? That's 3 hours a week. Just put 3 things on your calendar. Otherwise, your calendar will fill up. You'll never be able to do anything. If you could do that, it could make all the difference in the world as far. And for most people, if they do 3 things a week for themselves, then that evolves into a daily self-care.
You're talking about blocking self-care time on your calendar?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
And you know what? It can also be self-care in the sense of, right now we're isolated. How about meeting at Radio Coffee? It's outdoors and talking and having some social time. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be physical care, but those are the kinds of things that can help. And I know we're, you know, heading toward the end of this, and I know that we have the holidays coming up. What are you two doing for the holidays, and how do you manage your self-care, your mental health during the holidays?
You turned that right around on us, Chris. We were going to ask you about, you know, just to kind of set the stage a little as we start to wrap up. And you know, we're recording this getting toward the middle of November, but we're going to air this episode probably fairly close to Christmas time, in part because the message that you have is one that people need to hear all the time, of course, but especially in the month of December, because it seems like even if you take away the pandemic, there's a very high incidence of issues that come up with lawyers and lay people too at year end. So, you know, it seems like the lessons that you've given us today, you know, certainly apply on a daily basis, but maybe even more so as we approach the holidays. My family, you know, I have a very small nuclear family, and right now, probably the best we're going to be able to do is get together and try to have an outdoor gathering, maybe in my mother's backyard where we're socially distanced with Matt. You know, I haven't seen my mother since before the pandemic hit. And so, but, you know, she's also of the age where she's high risk and has some health conditions that put her even at a higher risk than just age. And so, you know, we've had to be careful about that. And that's really probably about all we're going to do, just because, you know, until the vaccine is out there and really rolling, that's all we feel safe doing. Nobody needs to contract the virus. It would be a negative for all of us. And so far, we've escaped it as a family, but that's probably it for us. What about you, Jody?
Kind of the same. You know, normally we have people travel in for Thanksgiving and we travel out for Christmas, and we're not doing either of those things this year. So we're just going to kind of be close to home. And so I think we're going to have to be certainly more intentional about reaching out to people. And we have been better the last few months, even if it's, you know, using Zoom or Google Hangouts to get online with family that we normally would be able to interact with in person. You know, sometimes we'll set aside Saturday evening and say, hey, let's all get on a Google Hangout at 8 o'clock and, you know, have family come on and we'll just sit and chat for a couple hours and just kind of catch up. And it's not the same as being in person, but it's something. And, you know, back to the idea of meditation and mindfulness, that's something I've done probably 4 or 5 years now. And that really does make a big difference for me. And it's not, once you get in the routine, it's not hard to keep up, because like you said, you can do it for 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, you can do it for 2 minutes a day, and you can set your Apple Watch to give you a reminder to do it for 2 minutes a day. And it really is something that just turns off. And I kind of got really deep into it personally, and not everybody has to do that, but there's apps you can get on your phone. There's YouTube videos. There's all kinds of things. It's something that's not hard to learn, but you can get as deep into it as you want and continue learning it, because there's so many nuances and it can be a lifelong thing. The only thing I will say is, and I've talked to people and they've said this, that if you just be careful, because if you really do get into it, you may find that you bring up things that you didn't realize were there, and just be prepared to deal with that. But, you know, I will vouch for that as something that really has made a positive difference long-term for me.
Yeah, we've done some family Zoom calls, which, you know, again, the irony, using the technology to help connect when the technology is hurting in other ways. But, you know, we've actually had more interaction with some of our siblings, my wife and I, and other relatives than we would otherwise. So that's been a blessing for me. I'm not into meditation, at least not yet. But one thing that really affected me when the pandemic hit was not being able to go to the gym, because I was doing that quite regularly, and I'm still struggling to get back where I was before the pandemic hit. But I'm on my way. It is something though that just helps with my daily routine and helps me sleep better, and just a great coping strategy generally that I'm very thankful to have.
Well, I know that for most attorneys, the holidays are like hurricane season for bad mental health. And it's not just dealing with in-laws or the crazy uncle or whatever that it might involve. And this is during the pandemic, it's probably going to look different. But it's that many of us as attorneys, we're oftentimes, not always, many have other family members that are our attorneys, but many are the only attorney in the family. And we have this, I think, nature of being kind of, oh, well, Chris is the attorney, ask him the questions, or so-and-so's having problems, some cousin has a drug problem, or some other cousin is going through a divorce, and our clients are, you know, gosh, family lawyers, I think, make most of their money in December, because there's so much that happens that's negative with, you know, the stress and all of that kind of thing. So I think it's also a great thing to mention and to talk about a plan for the holidays. So if you have a mental health plan, for one, it's not getting stuck somewhere that you can't get out of for too long. And if that means driving your own car to the event, even if you're married, sometimes we get situated in a really unhealthy spot where, you know, you get stuck for an entire football game worth of time with somebody that you really don't want to be sitting beside talking to. And you could have come up with a need an errand to run. And I think we should give ourselves permission and forgiveness to pause and go out of that environment when we need to give ourselves some peace. I know so many people just suffer through it and are feeling like they're in a room with someone they're uncomfortable with or whatever. We don't have to be that way. I've seen masterful people in my family say, oh, I've got to go to the pharmacy. I'll be back in a few minutes. And then they come back 2 hours later. Those kind of things happen all the time. But I just want everyone to consider giving themselves, putting themselves first a little bit for their well-being and giving themselves breaks and not being Superman, not having to be perfect and knowing that it's really hard for everybody. And so there's no one thing that can necessarily fix it all. But I do think having a plan so that you know kind of when you're going somewhere and how you might be able to get out. And gosh, I can tell you from Thanksgiving's past and Christmas's past, there's a bunch of people in my family that seem to disappear a lot during these things. Develop that skill. If you're in the one place that you need to disappear, go disappear. I used to, as growing up, we would always sit out. The kids would always sit outside. When I grew up, I was wanting to go outside again. You know, it was like, gosh, I wish I could still sit at the kids' table. But these are things that, you know, lawyers face. And I also do think that we also face financial stresses. Or are we going to be able to afford to buy these things for Christmas? Just know that you're not alone and make a plan to get through the holiday. Make a plan to talk to some other people, maybe that aren't in your family, about what you're going through in the holidays.
We usually ask for a tip or a war story to wrap up an episode, but I think that's about the best tip. That the last 5 minutes or so of our visit today really is a great way to cap us off. You mentioned earlier, Chris, you know, being on Twitter, and I know that you personally are, and I know that TLAP has a Twitter account. Would you just let folks know how they can follow you and TLAP on Twitter to get more information?
So the place we're most active is our Facebook site, and it's just facebook.com/TLAP Helps. And on Twitter, it's TLAP Helps is the name of our Twitter account. But our Twitter account, honestly, just kind of mimics what we post on Facebook here and there. But on Facebook, we'll post programs. We're going to have programs over the holidays. Also, at TLAPHelps.org, there is a button with over 20 hours of different programs, videos on different topics like the ones we're talking about that could be helpful for gearing up for the holidays or for learning about boundaries or whatever the topics are. And if anybody ever needs anything, you can call or text us anytime at 800-343-TLAP.
It's important to point out, too, I think sometimes there's a misperception that TLAP is the state bar. And it's important to point out that those contacts are completely confidential, right?
Absolutely. There's a statute that protects it. We are an agency, a part of the state bar, but I want you to know we tell no one anything. We don't talk to discipline. We don't talk to the other departments other than waving by when I walk past them sometimes. But we're walled off in our own department, and we don't share information of anyone. And if anybody's ever worried about that, you don't have to tell us who you are when you call us. We're not worried. We just want to help people, and it's a safe place to get help.
And you have a lot of resources that you can help pair people with or direct them to. So even if you don't know where to start or what to do, TLAP is a great place to start if you're trying to figure things out.
Yes, we can connect people to specialized professionals. We can connect people to groups, to peer support. And if there's funding that's needed for care, we have access to a trust that can help attorneys if they have financial need.
Well, thanks so much, Chris, for spending the time with us today. I think it's just extremely useful information that you've passed on. And, you know, it's important to all of us and for Jody and I to convey to our listeners that, you know, there is help out there if you need it. You don't have to feel like you're facing this alone, and you don't have to be the undefeatable warrior day in, day out. It's not worth your mental health to carry that around with you all the time. And so we're just very grateful for you spending the time with us and hope that our listeners get some benefit out of this episode.
Absolutely. And before we go, we'd like to pause for a moment and thank our sponsors, Thomson Reuters and Court Surety Bond Agency. We appreciate their support.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you're enjoying the podcast, please recommend it to colleagues you think might benefit from listening.
Taking the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts would be great too. We appreciate everyone who's rated us so far.
And if you have questions, thoughts, or comments, please shoot us an email at hosts@texaplawpod.com. Message us on Twitter or Instagram at texaplawpod, or reach out through the podcast's Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you.
Until next time, we wish you all the best and hope you're all staying safe and healthy, especially through the holidays.
That's right. Happy holidays.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. To stay in touch with your hosts, suggest topics, or express interest in coming on the show, visit us online at texapplawpod.com or on Twitter at @texapplawpod. The views expressed by the participants on this podcast are their own and not those of their law firms, courts, or employers. Nothing you hear on this show establishes an attorney-client relationship or is legal advice.